This is Zman Elul, Tavshin Mem Zayin. Rabbi Mann is going to give a shiur on Eza Kenegdo in the beginning of Bereishis.
That we're concerned with today is the story of the creation of the woman, creation of Chava, right? As you know, I'm sure you're all familiar with the fact that in Bereishis there are two accounts that the Torah gives of creation. Two accounts. The first account is basically telling you the results of the creation, without going into any of the particular reasons why a thing, or the particular method that was employed, just telling you what God created. Then in the second account, it affords us an insight. It goes into certain particulars. Alright? In the first account, it simply says that God created the humans, male and female created them. There's no indication that the creation of the woman was any different than the creation of the female in the other species. But if you go into the second account, we have a different picture. So let's take a look at the second account. And we'll begin from Perek Beis. From Tesvav. From Tesvav, it just simply says that God took the Adam and put him in Gan Eden, Liavdo Lishamra, to guard it and to work it, whatever work he had to do there. It wasn't a very heavy work, but apparently it entailed some keeping of the garden. Then God gave him the command and said, from all the fruits of the garden, all the trees of the garden, you may eat. From the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shouldn't eat from it, because on the day that you eat from it, you will certainly die. Okay, I'm not going to get into that right now. These issues have been, you know what this means, that you will certainly die, and so on and so forth. Then those have been taken up already, and they're on the tape. Let's go into the issue now of the creation of woman. Then God said, Lo tov hayos adam levado. It is not good for man to be alone. Eslo ezer kinegdo. I will make for him an ezer kinegdo. Ezer means a helper. Now, what does kinegdo mean? Kinegdo literally means opposite. Kineged means opposite. I'm sorry?
Against.
Yeah, well, in other words, yeah. In the literal, plameshot doesn't mean against.
No, I don't.
It means alongside, opposite, on his level, in other words, so to speak. Similar to him, like him. I guess that's the plameshot. But Rashi says an interesting thing. Certainly the idea of opposition is intended. Because Rashi says, Zocha Ezer. If he's Zocha, you know, if he merits it, then she's a helper. Lo zacha, kinegdo lihilachem. If he doesn't merit it, then she will be kinegdo, opposite, an opponent, lihilachem, to fight with him. So clearly, Rashi does see that the term kinegdo does have that implication. Although I don't believe that's the plain shot. It doesn't mean a helper who's an opponent to him. That's not the plain shot. Kinegdo means it's on his level, in other words. Someone like him. Or alongside of him. But the point is like this, the Torah certainly conveyed that idea of opposition. Of course, that Rashi itself I want to address. That's one of my kashas. Because what do you mean? What do you mean if it's, the Torah described her as being by nature an Ezer Kinegdo, right? So what do you mean if it's Zocha? Where does Rashi get this idea? What does it mean if you're Zocha? If you're Zocha, what do you have to be? What does it mean you're Zocha? It's a special merit that you have, then you get an Ezer. And if you don't merit one, you get a Kinegdo. That's like a completely separate idea. I mean, where does Rashi get it from? Okay, that's a kasha. That's one of my kashas. Then it says like this: Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min Adam, min Adama, and God created from the earth Kol Chayas Hasara, V'Chol Eis Kolav Shemayim, all the animals of the field and the birds of the sky. Vayavei El Adam, and He brought them to the man Liros Ma'yikrolo to see what He would call them. V'Chol Ashiyikrolo Adam Nefesh Chaya Hushmo, and every name that He gave to the animals, that's its name. So the man gave names to all of the animals, to the birds of the sky, and the beasts of the field. But for man he had not found an Ezer Kinegdo. So God caused a deep sleep to fall on the man, and he slept. He took one of his ribs, when he enclosed flesh beneath it. And God built the rib that He had taken from the man into a woman, and brought her to the man. And the man said, Zosapam, this is it. Etzemei atzai, bone of my bone, ubasan of psori, and flesh of my flesh, lazos yikari isha. This shall be called woman, kimeish lukachazos, because she has been taken from the man. Al ken yazav ishasav v'yasimo. Therefore a man will abandon his father and his mother, v'dovak b'yishto, and cling to his wife, v'hoi l'basarechet, and they shall be one flesh. Who said Al ken? Was that a continuation of the speech of Adam, Al ken? No. Do you want to talk to me?
Yeah.
Oh, so in other words, like this. So it's clear, obviously, this is not a continuation of what Adam is saying. Adam didn't say, Al ken, therefore shall a man. But this the Torah is saying. In other words, Adam says, Zosapam, etzame etzame. Then God says this. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother. The Delek be Yishton, he'll cling to his wife. They shall be one flesh. Okay. Then it says they were both naked, the man and his wife. Below you spoke Shashu. And they weren't embarrassed. At this point, I'm not going to go. Now the Torah goes into the story of the Chet. I'm not going to go into that right now. That's a separate parsha. All right. The only before we take up the analysis of the area, I just want to point out one further pasuk which is relevant, and that's in chapter Gimel. That's in chapter Gimel. Hold it a second. Yeah, in chapter Gimel Pasuk Chaf. And this is after the Chet and God's punishments. You know, B'zeis HaFechat Toch HaLechem, the whole business, right? Then in Pasuk Chaf it says, V'yikra HaAdam Shem Ishto Chava. That he called the name of his wife Chava, Ki Yoisa Enkel Chayim, because she was the mother of all life. Now, what strikes as a strange, or let's get to the divarat. I just want to point your attention to that pasuk. Alright? Now I just want to state the basic questions. What are the basic problems that we have to deal with in this area? What would you say is the main question? In everything we've read, what is the major, most fundamental question of all? Okay. The most fundamental question is
the two ways that the two accounts of the story. What happened?
Well, the two accounts, there's no, I mean, they one supplements the other, let's put it that way. I'm not getting into why the Torah chose to do so, I'm not really getting into
the two accounts.
No, in other words, there's the first account that I mentioned at the beginning, there's the first account of creation. It says that God created them simultaneously. But the first account is not in conflict, because the purpose of the first account is just to tell you the outcomes of creation, without going into the specifics, the reasonings. Then there's the second account, it's supplemental. Because you see, in the second account, it tells you how the woman was created, which is omitted from the first account. Yes, Ralph? Oh, I'm sorry.
Good? There's a question. Why was she created in this way?
Yes, that's the question. Right.
I said over there.
Why did the second account? Right. Yes, the most fundamental question is, why did God change his plan? Not so much why was the woman created from the man. Because God's the creator, and alright. That's how God created her. But the point is, it's a stronger question. Of course we could ask why. It's a stronger question that if God changed his plan. Because with regard to all the animals, the male and the female were created simultaneously. That was God's plan, to create them simultaneously. So if that's the proper way to do it, why isn't in the human, something must have happened, right, that caused God to deviate from that plan? So that's the most fundamental question of all. Is it agreed? No, Avi? You don't like the question.
I don't understand.
What's the problem?
Why can you say a little woman? That was God's plan. I don't know why, but for some reason the animals were created separately. Well, all right.
If you want to put it there, of course, I agree with you. But why two plans, in other words? Why is there a different plan? Why must there be a different plan? You see that in creation. In other words, it was God's objective in creation to create male and female. And that seems to, in the animal kingdom, we see that simultaneity is fine. You don't need one to be created from the other. So why by man do you have to have one created from the other? If you want to put it that way. Okay? It doesn't really matter how you put it. But that's something that should be explained. Okay? Now, any other questions? Yes?
Yeah, what's the break between Pasuk Yudches and Chabal?
Okay, excellent question. In other words, the naming, the digression about the naming of the animals seems totally out of context. Sorry? Yes. I'm going to get to that. I have some new ideas to add, but not everything I'm going to be saying is new. I'll make it very clear, you know. But this is the question. The question is, why is there a digression about the animals? It says that it's not good for the man to be alone, and then it goes over to the creation of the animals and the naming of the animals, and why is that relevant? And interestingly enough, at the end of that thing, it says, and for man he had not found a hell. What does that have to do with the naming? It seems like the two ideas are related, right? He was naming the animals, but for man there was no. What does one thing have to do with the other? So it's two questions. First of all, why is the digression placed there? And secondly, what does the fact that he was naming the animals have to do with the fact that he hadn't found a helper for him? Okay, that's the second question of the questions. Also,
what's the interruption?
That's the question.
No, the next interruption.
Which was created, fine.
The names are again.
Ah, that's the next issue. In other words, why does she have two names? Let's put it, there's a cluster, in other words. There's a cluster of questions, all revolving around one idea. First of all, the woman receives two names. First she's called Isha, right? Then she's called Chava. So why does she have two names? Moreover, why is the second name given later on, after the Chait and the punishments? See, if you were going to tell me the second name deals with the fact that she's the mother of all life. So if you're going to tell me that he gave her that name after she had a child, if you want to say that, so then all right. Even though I don't see why they'd have to wait, I mean, but nevertheless, you say, okay, when she had a child, then he gave her that. But it's not the case. She hadn't had a child yet. So it was after the Chait. Why didn't he give her that name Chava right away? If this creature has to have two names, Isha and Chava, so then he should have given the name Chava right away. Why this whole digression? Okay? She did have, what do you mean she had children already? It doesn't say that she had children.
We have children.
We're going to the Medrash. She didn't have children right away.
It was right after the Chait.
Well, what's the...
Right after the Chait. Then it says, Vayeda, what was the punishment?
The punishment was that she's
going to... that she had children? Otherwise, that wouldn't be a fitting... The punishment is like this. That, what's the punishment of... did Adam have to work the ground before?
You mean if I tell
did
you
Adam have to work the ground before, Howie? Before the curse?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Well,
yeah, but love, that doesn't mean working the ground. It was a different kind of work. If Noah, he didn't, because everything was produced, God gave him all the fruit that he needed.
Not the sustenance.
The work was like, yeah, the work was a light type of a work, to keep it in order, whatever.
So he had a light type of work, and now he has to do the work what? So
now it's a qualitatively, no. Now it's
I know there's a difference between how I did it.
The difference, Howie, before he didn't have to work for survival. Now he has to work or he'll die.
But he knew what work was, and he knew what he had before. Now if I just tell you,
you'll have a punishment. Yeah, I've changed something in the thing. From now on, you're going to have children, but it's going to be painful.
You never had children. So I might not believe you.
Oh, come on, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
you believe me if it's God. If God's talking, you have to believe. That doesn't make any sense.
Does Washington want to do what it wants?
She
actually did
that. There is. I don't. So it doesn't make any difference. So we have fact. Right, Rashi holds that I forgot about this Rashi altogether. Rashi holds that she had given birth in Gan Eden. Right? So fine. So then, it makes it better for you then. So it fits in with what you want to say. No, but I held that you didn't have to make that deduction.
No.
Rashi made a deduction from V'yadam Yada. I don't think he made a deduction from the fact that otherwise the whole punishment would be senseless. I don't think so. But since the whole thing is irrelevant, I don't care. Okay? Let's go. So those are my basic questions. Also, I would like to understand, if we can, what does it mean? Lo tov hayos adam levado. Right? What does it mean? So we have everybody has a certain idea. But maybe we could define it a little bit better. And what does it mean, Ezer Kinegdo? And there's one other question that I wanted to ask. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention this question. There's another pasuk that's totally out of context here. What pasuk is totally out of context?
Okay.
Yes. Alken Yazov. What does that have to do with it? It seems to be totally, it's all of a sudden, it's like it's a story pertaining to Adam. Adam was alone, then he names the animals, then God creates the woman, right? Brings it, the woman to him, and he's very happy. So it's a man, some pasuk. Lazos, you got to keep me a shukar lazos. Now why is the Torah suddenly like taking over and making an announcement? Al Kain Yazavish. I mean, it's a nice thought. And it may have a place in the Torah, but why here? What does it have to do? What light does it illuminate? You know what I mean? He didn't have any parents, and he didn't have to separate from them, so it doesn't really apply to Adam. It just seems to me totally out of nowhere. Al Kain Yazavish, therefore shall I man abandon the Fatima. Whoa, what does that have to do with creation? What does that have to do with the thing here? It's a nice thought. Okay? Those are my basic questions. Alright. Now, the first question I'm going to address myself to is the question of the creation of the woman, why the woman was created in this way. That's the primary question. Now, I want to make, Avi pointed out that this is already on tape. Okay? And the thing is like this. Many years ago, Rabbi Chaik gave a shiur on the subject. And he took up this very question. The question of why the woman was created, why God changed his plan when he created the woman. Now I'm going to base myself on that pshat. I think it's a correct pshat. But what I want to do is to go beyond it. I want to make clear what I mean by beyond. I want to expand it. He only dealt with one aspect of the situation, in my opinion anyways. I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but in my opinion, he only dealt with one aspect of the question. Now, I want to apply this concept, or go, in other words, to different areas. I don't mean to say that I'm an expanded in the sense that he didn't go deeply enough. That's not what I mean. Like, sometimes you say it's a good idea, but I want to go further in terms of...
area.
Yeah. I mean, he addressed himself to certain questions. I am going to address myself. I believe that more questions exist over here, which he didn't address himself to, and that's what I'm going to take up. So I don't know that whether he would agree with me or not agree with me. I mean, it's, I'm just trying to tell you, I'm not I'm accepting his concept, but I'm going to apply it to different areas. All right, you'll see what I mean. It'll become clear. All right, now in order to answer this first question, this is what Rabbi Chait said. Why the woman was created from the man. So he said, in order to understand that, you have to understand the very nature of man, what his nature was like. What was the nature of Adam prior to the Chait? So, I think we're all pretty much familiar that the Torah uses two terms to describe man. One term is, Vayihi Adam l'nefesh chaya, right? Vayihi papiyach pav nishmas chayim. God blew into his nostrils, so to speak, the breath of life. And the man was a nefesh chaya. And the term nefesh chaya means animal life, because it's the same term that God uses by the creation of nefesh chaya. Nefesh chaya means animal. Alright? So man was a creature who had a dual nature. Dual nature. On the one hand he was an animal. On the other hand he was another element, which was what? Tzelem Elokim. So man was different than all the animals. The other animals had a singular nature. Just instinctual. Man was different. Alright? Now, how is man supposed to function? How is this person supposed to function? And how can you have such a combination? In fact, by the way, there's an interesting medrash when it says, Nasa Adam. It says in the plural, let us make man. So why is it in the plural? God is singular. So the medrash says that there was a debate between God and the Malachi, Hasharis, the heavenly court. And they said you shouldn't make man. They said because it's an impossibility. You can't have a creature like this. Contradiction in terms. I mean, either you have a creature of instinct, see? So it's harmonious, or you have a creature which is pure intellect without physical, which is harmonious. But here you're taking two contradictory terms. Now, on the one hand, it's instinctual, on the other hand, it's intellectual. The two don't go together. It's impossible. So NASA, God overruled them. So it means to say that man, the existence of such a creature who partakes of this duality is something which can only be dictated by the wisdom of Chachmas Hashem could do it. We couldn't understand how it's feasible. Alright? Now the thing is like this though. Functionally speaking, how do these two principles relate to each other? How can, within one being? So I want to bring in a chazal. That's a very important chazal, which is really the underlying principle, the underlying yesod of the whole ethical philosophy of Yagos. Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin says that, I believe it's Daf Lamed Amud Beis, says that in Pogo Bacha Menuvol Zeh, if this ugly thing grabs a hold of you, Mashchehu the Beis Medrash, drag it to the Beis Medrash. And Evenu, if it's a stone, Nimuach, it will be melted. And Barzel, if it's steel, Mispotes, it will be broken into pieces. You'll smash it into pieces. So what is the underlying idea that's being expressed by the Chazal? What does it mean in Pogo Bacha Menuvol Zeh? What's the Menuvol, this ugly one? The Yetzirah. Which means to say, if a person is overcome by an instinct, Yetzirah means any instinct, any emotion in fact. It doesn't have to be, it can be a sexual desire, it can be anything. It can be a sort of any type of, or any fantasy. It can be anything. So what do? Mashcheh the Beis Medrash. Drag it to the Beis Medrash, which means to say that what? Get involved in Chachmah. Get involved. It doesn't mean literally you have to go to the Beis Medrash. Get involved in thought. Now, what is the underlying idea behind the Memra? This is a very important idea. It means to say that man is so constructed that basically there's one energy system in the psyche. And that the energy which is attached to the instinctual can be discharged through the intellectual. See, that's the concept really of sublimation of the instincts. And so man, I mean, that's a very important yourself. If man were not designed that way, then it would be a hopeless thing. Because the base measure could never help him when he had an instinct. Because what an instinct means is a sum of energy which is attached. And if that energy was dischargeable, like in the animal kingdom, there's no such phenomenon. The energy attached to the instincts is only one solution, instinctual gratification. If man were that way, then there'd be an impossibility. But man was so designed that the energy which is attached to the instinctual can be discharged through the chachma. In fact, that's the whole road. That's mapping out for you the whole road of human life. Because it's only through that process that man can have a happy life. Because if man's energy is purely fixated to the instinctual, then he can live. He can only live like a behemoth. Then he's going to fail. Because man cannot find happiness as a behemoth in a purely instinctual existence. It's an impossibility. Because he has too much energy. He can't be satisfied. He's constantly looking for more. He's constantly being frustrated. So the avenue which Yadus has set out for human happiness, that is to say that the extent that the person is involved in the pursuit of true ideas is really engraved in man in a psychological sense. See, it's part of the psyche. God designed the psyche to function that way. So the energy originally begins attached to the instinctual, to the physical. But the road to happiness is by detaching, and when he discharges it in the intellectual, he achieves true happiness, because that arena of activity is the one which is most in line with man's nature. God designed man and the world so that if he engages in that form of activity, he'll find happiness. But if he doesn't make that crossover, you got to work on that. Develop the ability to redirect the libido, the energy. This is very important in the Stamazay, at this time of the year, in terms of tshuva. Because this is the whole concept of tshuva, is to work on this. This is your whole endeavor in life. If you can't, you got to work on it. It's not going to happen naturally. Because naturally, the energy is flowing towards the instinctual. And don't think the instinctual is just a beautiful girl, or a fine wine, or a beautiful meal. It could be a fantastic business deal, or it can be a great job. It could be. Could not be. It could be a job. This and that business could be rational. It could also be fantasy. And insofar as the person is involved in the fantasy world, he's departing. He's departing from the course. He's going to encounter the codes for Darda. It's going against the grain. Insofar as he can utilize the physical as a necessary means, but he can redirect his energy, that's the road. that's not so easy, though. You see, the energy can be discharged, but it's not going to happen naturally. It requires a lot of work. Now, just as an additional factor over here, since we're on the Chazal, that's what they're saying. Mashkeil based measures means that the solution lies in the redirection, sublimation. If it's the stone, it melts. If it's steel, you break it into pieces. What's the idea? What's the difference between, what are they saying over there? What's the difference between stone and steel? What's the concept? It's a side point, but while we're on it already, we might as well do it. Any thoughts?
There are two ways you can overcome it.
Okay, there's two different levels, in other words, but I think from this Chazal, it seems to it seems to make it dependent upon how strong a thing it is. Sometimes a person, you know, is walking down the street and he sees something. Say he sees a beautiful woman. So his fantasies are aroused and it's bothering him. But it's not that, it hasn't taken that much of a grip. But then somebody else comes along, gives him a problem, a thought, an idea, and he forgets the whole thing. He says, anymore. That's it. It's gone. All the energy was dissipated. So sometimes the instinctual requirement is such that it's amenable. You see, it can be totally melted. It means you can transform, a total transformation of energy from the instinctual into the intellectual. But sometimes it's too powerful. You can't give it up. You see? Then it's still a solution. Because, in other words, the question is the hold that it has upon you. A person can have a certain instinct, right? But it becomes so powerful that he can't separate himself from it. He can't cope. He has to have it. He identifies his whole essence with that need. Then they say, no, Mashchela Beis Medrash. When you come to the Beis Medrash, you'll break it into pieces. You'll still have the need, but it's a totally different thing. It's not the end of the world. I can cope with it. I can deal with it. Because now you've seen the total picture. You've seen the chachma. You see how this fits into the whole perspective. You're a different gabra. You're not the same. You follow? You still have a need. You still need a car. But that you've changed the nature of that need. Beforehand, it was an overwhelming thing. You couldn't move. Now, it's a different thing. It's not the end of the world. It's a need, and I can cope with it. That's what it's supposed to be. It breaks the pieces. Okay? Important chazal in its own right. Now, the thing is like this. So when God designed Adam, right? When God designed Adam, what was the purpose of Adam? The purpose of Adam, the reason why he was given a tzelem elokim, was to be involved in the study and the enjoyment of Chachmas Hashem. That was his whole purpose. That there should be one creature who can recognize and enjoy and appreciate Chachmas Hashem. That's all it is. That's the mission. You see? So what is so therefore, but he has all this instinctual energy. So the objective was, God set him up so that all his energy should be discharged to Chachma. That's why you see he was involved in the naming of the animals. That's the idea, the naming of the animals. What was he? Why did God? It also seems strange. What did God have to bring more animals to name? So the naming of the animals, as Rabbi Chait pointed out, really means the study of the Bria. It was scientific classification. He was studying the different species and so forth, and he was involved in classification. So he was studying Chachmas Hashem. So that's the that's what he was doing. So what does it mean, lo tov ve'yos adam levado? It fits the point. In other words, the plan was that he should find fulfillment in intellectual activity, which is the greatest enjoyment, through the discharge of the energy. Lo tov ve'yos adam levado. This is where I Chait explained it meant that it was, in practically speaking, it's impossible. Even though the rule is that the energy is amenable to sublimation, but a certain amount cannot be discharged. It can't be total. It's not perfect. You know, there's a certain amount of friction, in other words. Meaning to say, a certain amount of the energy that remains and can only be gratified through instinctual gratification. That's why it's low-tow. He needed a partner. He needed a sexual outlet. Which, in other words, it's not an absolute, the idea of sublimation. There'll always be a certain need for actual gratification. Oh. So that's the relevance, in other words. You know, he was involved in naming the animals, and the other one was Ezer Kenegdo. But for man, he hadn't found an Ezer Kenegdo because the naming of the animals was the activity which was utilizing his energy, but it wasn't sufficient. It wasn't sufficient. Okay? So that's why he needed a woman. That's why he needed a woman. Now, why did the woman have to be created from the man? Why from the man? If that's the case. So the answer, again, is to know the specific nature. It's rooted in the same idea, the nature of man, as opposed to the animals. In the animal kingdom, the animals, right, have only one principle, purely instinctual. So therefore, the whole nature of their mating is an instinctual. It's an instinctual thing. But in man has a dual nature. That is to say, he's instinctual, but he also has a tzelem elokim, which means he has a psyche. So his mating was different. His mating had to satisfy not just the instinctual, but also the psychological aspect. So the psychological aspect had to be addressed. Now, what is the psychological, specifically speaking, what particular emotion do we see from the way, in other words, we see from the way the woman was created and so forth, what particular emotion had to be satisfied over here?
So the answer is, if you know a little psychology, you know that as the child develops, you see, he, in his earliest years, he experiences the phenomenon of love. Who is the first love object of the child? It's really the self, the love of self. As the psychic energy develops, it takes the self as its first object. That's called narcissism, love of self. And from that point, it goes out and it chooses other objects. And in fact, the psychic energy of a person is always going up and back. And every object that he chooses always contains, you see, psychologically or unconsciously, a reflection of the self. It always involves love of self through an external object. And of course, you can't deny it. We know that the love of self, narcissism, is a very powerful emotion, which people, you know, becomes a big problem in their life. People have to contend with all their life. I mean, you know what I mean? It's deflected from the self, and he can love others, but there are certain people that can't love anybody else. They're totally in love with themselves. That's an extreme case of extremely narcissistic people. I mean, they're totally caught up with the love of self. But everybody experiences self-love. The only thing is that a certain amount of the energy becomes detached from the self and chooses objects. You see, but those objects can't be that far away from the self. So that's the point, in other words. This is what Reich said, that in Adam, the instinctual, in other words, his needs could not be satisfied purely by instinctual. It had to satisfy the psychic. And the psychological factor that had to be satisfied was a narcissistic factor. And that's why she had to be one, only a being who actually was a part of him, was separated from him and was a part of him, could satisfy that. Because that in that case, the narcissistic identification would be adequate. And this, of course, is reflected in what he said. So sometimes that pasuk is a giveaway. That's why did he like her? And by the way, Chazal also say, to further emphasize, to further clarify why it says that he was naming the animals, what's the connection between the two? Chazal say that he had relations with the animals. He wasn't satisfied. Before God created the woman, he had relations with the animals, and he wasn't satisfied. And why? Because the animals was purely an instinctual phenomenon. See? That's why he was naming the animals. And also, according to Chazal, it means he engaged in sexual relations with them. But for man, he wasn't satisfied. Because the animal did not satisfy the psychological need. And then, Zosapam, this is the one. Etzame. The fact that she's bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. So that's this he can relate to. This satisfies the narcissistic. Okay? Alright, I'll take questions. I just want to say, Ad Kan is basically, I mean, what Rabbi Chait said. If I remember, I didn't listen to the tape recently, I have it in my notes, but I mean, may have made some other points, but I think I'm saying it over pretty faithfully. This is basically what his pshat was. Okay. And women have self-love, and I'm not going to get into that right now. The truth of the matter is, even your kasha is a very good kasha, but I don't want to get into it right now. We're accounting. This explains what happened here. Clearly, answers our kasha. Alright? This is Beza said. This is what Rabbi Chait, that was his shot. Now, what I'm saying is like this, that the way it would sound from this is that the creation of the woman was necessitated. And I'm not saying that Rabbi Chait said that, because he didn't say that. But I'm saying if you just leave it at that, it would seem that it was necessitated purely by the sexual need. In other words, that he, only by the sexual need, in other words, he needed a sexual object. And the sexual object could only be one who was created from him. And that's why. Now I say that there are more factors. Yes?
He just said it because of the narcissist.
Right? He could not be satisfied sexually, unless it satisfied the psychological. But it was a sexual need, in other words. Does that make sense? In other words, he had a sexual need, right? He needed a sexual object, right? But he could not. In other words, it wasn't purely the instinctual of sex. It had together with it the emotion of the narcissist had to be satisfied in it.
Even the root of the thing.
Yeah, right. It was a sexual need, but that's right. But in order to be satisfied, his sexual need was tied together with his psychological need. The narcissistic was tied together. If you want to. Right? In other words, like this, it wasn't that the animal satisfied him. sexual. He was satisfied sexually, but he wasn't satisfied narcissistically. That's not what he said. In other words, in the sexual in him, the sexual instinct in man was different, exactly, operated differently, carried with it another emotion. So the two things were merged together. That's the way I understood it. Okay? Now, here are my questions, why I feel we have to go further. Would you, in other words, do you notice any reasons why we can't leave it at that? Or there's more to it? I would say, like, these are the things that bother me. First of all, this may not seem to be like such a powerful question, but I think there's significance here. The term levado bothers me. Loto veyos adam levado seems to be more than just the absence of sex. It seems to be describing a certain condition. For example, if a person were in the mountains alone, right, and he was very, very happy, right, very happy, but he didn't have a food supply. So you wouldn't say it's not good for him to be alone. It's good for him to be alone. Just that in order to be alone, he has certain needs. He's lacking food, but he's not. It's not that the aloneness is no good. And the same thing, he was very happy to be alone, except he just needs a sex object. So a sex object is an object for sex. It's no different than a need for food. Same thing. So what is it? I think that term levado is too strong.
No, the social need?
I'm sorry?
There's also a social need.
Yeah, it seems like it wasn't just. Right, right. It was like the being alone was a bad thing. Moreover, if you accept that, the next thing that strikes me is... what it says, Lotova Yosef Levado, Eselo Ezer Kinegdo. Now, Ezer Kinegdo, I mean, is more than just a sex, someone to satisfy the sexual, seems to me. That's a very complicated way. That term Ezer Kinegdo carries a tremendous amount of significance. It's a very significant term. And you see, Rashi, Zacha, Ezer, Lozach, Kinegdo. But what do you need such an exquisite construction over here? It's a very complicated thing. I mean, all you need, alright, so we've granted that you need someone who's created from. You're created from him. What, you don't need Ezer Kinegdo. Ezer Kinegdo implies something more. You follow what I'm saying? You follow? And finally, the Pesuk Al Ken Yazav, we have to explain, but it says, V'davak v'ishto v'hoyu l'basar echad. That again implies more. Again, if what do you have to have V'davak v'ishto v'hoyu l'basar echad? What do you need that for? You know what I mean? He'll cling to his wife and they become one flesh. When they become one flesh, obviously doesn't mean physically. It means that there's a whole new unit that's created. A new identity, a new unit is created. And if he just needs sex, so what do you have to have a duck? I mean, the Torah seems to be saying it's more than that. The creation of woman and the relationship that's going to be established seems to me to be more than just a sexual outlet. Those are my questions. Okay? Alright, so now I want to add a new element. This is purely my own. So, you know, whatever, if you like it or don't like it, it's, you know, don't complain to Rabbi Chase. I mean, he didn't say it. I'm sorry?
Complain
to me. Don't complain to me either. I'm not interested in hearing your complaint. Complain to your wife. See if she's an Azer or a Kinegdo. Okay. So here's what I want to posit. See, I want to say it like this. You have to bear with me over here. Hear it out, you know. See if you like it or not. I want to say like this. We see that this is a phenomenon of, I'm basing myself on Rabbi Chait's idea, a phenomenon of self-love. Right? Now you see from this phenomenon that there are two emotions in man. One is the sexual instinct. But then there's an emotion of love, right? In other words, which is an outgrowth, a sublimation of the sexual instincts. I'm not going into that question. But man does not just experience the need for the sexual, he also experiences the need for love. Because you see that he takes himself as a love object. So he's involved in the emotion of love. Now, I say from the fact that the ego becomes the first... love object shows us two things. A, that there's a sum of love which needs an object. There's a certain amount of quantity of love that's searching for a object. That's one. But on the other hand, the fact that the ego attracts that shows that the ego itself is in need of this love. that the ego of a person needs the love, has a need for the love. So therefore what I'm saying again, plain ordinary terminology, to make it simple, is that man has a need to love. He's searching, he has a certain amount of energy of love, which is certain, he has a need to love, and he also has a need to be loved, which seems to fit our everyday ordinary experience. I mean, I don't think anybody could deny that in terms of his own life. Now, I want to focus a bit, though, more specifically on the need of man to be loved. I want to go into that. All right? Now, it seems to me like this, that, you know, the human psyche is composed of different elements. There's the instinctual, what we call the id, there's the superego, and there's the ego. Of course, they're all important, but I would say that in terms, which of these three would you say is the most important agency in terms of fulfilling man's purpose in life?
What? The ego.
Fulfilling man's purpose in life. It seems to be the ego, because the ego is charged. I mean, the ego is the one which has rationality, which has free will, which makes decisions. I mean, the ego is the agency which has to carry out the task. It has to control. It has to control the instinctual. It has to not be overwhelmed by the superego. I mean, it has to work at the internal harmony, and then it has to carry out the external tasks. The ego of man is charged when God said, Ruhu, Miluus Aris Pekipshua. I mean, man has a tremendous task to accomplish in life. And basically, it's the ego which is going to carry it out. The human ego. Now, while we speak about egotism a lot, and we say it's the human disease, it's a terrible thing, so we're always looking at the downside of that. We tend to forget, though, that while egotism, which is a distorted view of the place of one's ego in the world, is bad, people sometimes have a false idea of what humbleness is. They think humbleness is where a person has no regard for himself. You know, in other words, people have a false idea of what true humility is. They think a truly humble person thinks like he's a piece of dirt, and he's a nothing, and he's worthless. That's an absurdity. Because while an excess of self-love is dangerous, you see, the other side of the coin is just as evil, depletion. A depleted ego cannot function. In fact, a person cannot function unless he has a certain amount of self-confidence, self-esteem. And therefore you have to be able to achieve a certain balance between a healthy self-esteem, and you have to avoid depletion of the ego. No achievement. A person could not do anything if he didn't have self-confidence. He wouldn't have confidence in his mind, in his ability. A person that, by the way, that today psychologically is one of the biggest problems that people go to therapy for. Depression, low self-esteem, lack of self-confidence. This is probably one of the most major problems that exist psychologically in the world today. Could you imagine Avraham Avinu taking on the whole world, raised in a society, everybody believed in idolatry, and to utilize his own mind? Who are you? And to think and to work it out, and then to follow his reason and to oppose the world and set out on a course? If he didn't have self-confidence? Who am I? I mean, that's the truth of the matter is that in terms of creative achievement, people think it's the smarter ones. In other words, intelligence is an important factor, but I wouldn't say that the great creators in the world in history was necessarily because they were smarter. There were plenty of other people in history that had the same intelligence as a Freud or an Einstein or whatever. I wouldn't say plenty. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, you got to be careful. Let's face it, it's extraordinary intelligence. But the factor of self-confidence is there are very few people that have. There are many great minds out there. But you see, they become followers. Very few people have that self-confidence to be able to look at the world in a totally different way. That requires a tremendous confidence. By the way, you see that brought down in the thing about Yosef, the whole story about Yosef, why he, in other words, how his tshuva, his process of rehabilitation. So the Rambam, why he had to wait 2 more years, you have to reinterpret it. The Ramban says, how did Yosef get the nerve to approach these two important people and ask them what their dreams were and give them the interpretations like that? He said he could have been killed if he told the guy he's going to die in 3 days and then it didn't happen. The guy would have been angry at him and he would have had him killed. So he said that Yosef had achieved a high level in his batuach b'chachmaso. Batuach b'chachmaso, he was confident in his chach. So he had the natural, in other words, self-esteem, in other words, self-confidence shouldn't be based on a crazy ego feeling that of invincibility. That's absurd. But if it's based upon a reality, a person is worked in his mind and his thought processes, and he's not motivated by crazy egotistic emotions. He has a certain confidence in the thought process. That's what tzolkuch muscle. That's very, a person can't function without that. See, a depleted ego. So what I'm saying is like this, basically, that the ego in man is the most important agency, but I would say it's like a battery. A battery has to have a certain charge of energy or it can't work. It has to be charged. And the ego in man has to have a certain charge. It can't function unless it has a certain charge, a charge of energy. I'm using it as, by the way, you see this, for example, I've read about babies. That babies, if they're left completely alone, and they're not giving any love, any attention, just provided with the necessities, the food, but they're not giving any love from a person, they die. So apparently, even at that stage, the ego, there has to be a certain ego, is not functioning. Or they have cases in the concentration camps. There were certain people, they used to call them Muslims they were called. These were people that were walking around like in a daze. They weren't, they were just there a short period of time. It wasn't because they were like already physically worn out. But being thrust into that situation was such a blow to their narcissism, their self-love, that they just were going in a daze. They couldn't function and they just died. They said these people are going to die in a few days. They just died. It was too much of a blow. By the way, you do see by the certain tragic experiences people sometimes just die from it. I know cases, where a woman, she lost her couple of children in a fire. It was a terrible tragedy, etc. And she was like in a completely demoralized state. I think she lived like a week and then she just died. So these are extreme cases. But the point I'm trying to say is that what I want to say is, where does this ego get its charge from? So I want to say that there are two sources. Primarily, it's from the self. I mean, each person has to have a certain amount of, that's where it starts, self-love. But the point of it is, the self, it's insufficient, in other words. To be in the proper state, it seems that man needs this charge from an external source with whom he can identify. In other words, he needs the love coming from an external object. And that complements it. That's what I want to say. That's the, that's what it means, lo tov ayos adam levado. Lo tov, not just that he doesn't have a sexual outlet, but lo tov, meaning in terms of his whole ability to function. He can't function at his best in this state. And by the way, Chazal always said that a person who's shari below isha, shari below tov, that a person who's should always be in a state of marriage, even if he's already been mekayim peruko, because it's a better state to be in. What I want to say is that lo tov does not only mean, does mean the absence of the sexual, but there was another part of man, and that deals with his whole ego state, and that is to say that alone is not the best. He needs an external object for the love that the ego needs. And that is the better state, a better state to function in. And that's why it's Ezer Kinegdo. If it's just a sexual object, she's not a helper. You don't call that a helper. It's just an object that you're using. Helper means that she helps him by giving him this, the love, in other words. So she helps him in terms that he functions better. And now I want to, what's kinegdo? What does Rashi mean? Zocha eza lo zocha kinegdo? So I want to say like this. Well, there's a few different levels of meaning in eza kinegdo. It's a very complex statement. But I would say like this. That once God created another person whose nature was to be an eza, was to support his ego, to reinforce his ego, because it needs reinforcement from an external source. By nature, the ego, that's what I want to posit. By nature, the ego of man requires reinforcement from an external source. He needs the love. Now, once he created an Ezer, though, there's a danger in that too. See, everything has its dangers. You see, Chazal say, Al tarva sicha misha. Even with your own wife, you shouldn't talk too much to women. Even with your, what does it mean? It means a certain kind of talk. Like a person is always looking for allies that back him up no matter what. He gets into an argument with his boss or with a neighbor, whatever it is, and he's angry. So he's looking for someone to support his position. So he runs to someone who he feels is going to endorse. You see, now if he has a person, that's not a good thing though. In other words, because when a person gets involved in a disagreement or whatever it is, he hears things that are unpleasant, he should be capable of looking at it objectively. Maybe there's some truth in what the person said. Not just to feel that everything he holds is correct. You see? Now, therefore, if God created the woman and she purely was an Azer, it would be bad too, because then he'd be someone totally indulging. A person's not to, a person get caught up in his own ego, infantile ego. I mean, everything that he wants, all of his desires, all of his needs. I mean, he has to be able to get out of the ego. It's necessary the ego be in a healthy state, but not that he's caught up totally in all of his own ego desires. So if the woman was purely an Azer and didn't have any kinegdo, that wouldn't be good either. What does kinegdo mean? Kinegdo means that she has an ego too. Kinegdo means that it's not purely Azer, because it's not like a person, like a person has a pet. A pet purely loves the master. It doesn't have its own ego. You see, if you have a good pet that's trained, it just does what makes you happy. It's not a kinegdo. Oh, you have to take care of this, but it's not a kinegdo. Kinegdo means that she has her own agenda. She has her ego. She has her needs. And that's why Rashi says, if it's Zachar, Zacha, it's an Azer. Lo Zacha, it's connected. Leilach, what do you mean Lo Zacha? Lo Zacha means if the guy is purely caught up in his own ego, and he can't recognize the validity of another ego outside of his own, you see? So then it's connected. Because she'll pick up that this guy is purely selfish, and right? And no person is just going to accept that. So what about her needs? Her needs don't count? No human being is going to accept that. So then it's connected. Leilach, they'll constantly be at war. But if it's Zacha, which means to say that he has his own ego, but he recognized the legitimacy of ours. So therefore he's able to put aside his own ego and listen to somebody else's, you see? So then she'll see that he's a just guy. When she says that it's an unjust situation, it's purely his ego, so that's Leilachim, she's connected. But when she sees that there's justice, so then she'll be happy, then it'll be that Zacha is a lo Zacha connected. But the connected is an essential element over there. Because if she was purely one who catered to his ego, he'd be stuck. He'd be stuck in his own ego. He'd be self-indulgent, self-pampered. He'd never recognize the validity of things outside of his ego. All right, do you want to stop here?
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, if Rolls Royces could now be found in abundance, then nobody would buy it. I mean, it wouldn't be a big deal anymore. You see? So the whole thing is a fantasy. All wealth is based upon a fantasy. It's because it's the thing that everybody looks up to, because it's not available. And Yemos HaMashiach, when all these things are available, well, whatever, through the changes that will take place in technology, and with the nuclear pattern, how it's going to work, I can only predict, and all these things will be motzi, so nobody will look up to a man who has a lot of wealth anymore, because it's meaningless. If everybody could have whatever they wanted, so what do you need money for? You don't understand that. But money is a fantasy. You're basing your whole life on a fantasy.
Yeah, well, people still...
If we leave it at that, that the creation of the woman was basically just for a sexual outlet, then I don't understand, first of all, why it's Azer Kinegdo. Azer Kinegdo implies much more than that. It's a whole type of relationship. In fact, Rashi says that if he merits it, Azer means she's a helper. If he merits it, she's a helper. If he doesn't merit it, then she's Kinegdo. Kinegdo means against him. Lilachim, an opponent. That's a different kind of a thing. It's a relationship already. Moreover, I said, if that's the case...
Vado.
I'm sorry?
Vado.
Yeah. Also, why Levado? What is the reason for Levado? In other words, Lo Tov Ayos Ad Levado is more than just lacking a sexual object, I think. It means the whole state of Levado is no good. There's something wrong with the state. Okay? And also, why... V'davak v'ishto, v'hoyu l'basar echad. Why? If it's just a sexual object, you don't have to have v'davak v'ishto. He clings to his wife, and they become as one unit. What do you have to become one unit for? That wouldn't be true if all you needed was a sexual object. That was my basic questions. Now, what I said, I gave one part of the answer. This was my basic premise, though. This is really, at bottom, the idea, the foundation of everything, the way I'm going to try and answer the questions, was that I said I agree with the concept of self-love, meaning to say the narcissistic phase. But I said we can deduce two things from that. A, that man, there's not just the sexual emotion, the sexual desire, but there's another desire which we call love. There's a desire to love. That emotion is present in man. You see? And secondly, since the ego is the first object of that love, in other words, the phenomenon of self-love, right? How does this come in? There are two components. A, there must be a certain quantity of energy of love, right? Looking for an outlet. If you didn't have that, you couldn't have self-love, right? On the other hand, that has to be satisfied. On the other hand, the ego attracts that. So the ego, you see, the ego then is a receptor. You follow the ego, if the ego, in other words, it couldn't be, the attachment could not be made unless there was a need on both sides. A, the energy is looking for an object, and B, that object has a need for it, so it attracts it. So all I have to say is like this, I wanted to concentrate. Therefore, I put it in plain terms, that every person in ordinary parlance, therefore needs someone to love, and needs to be loved, which, as I said, corresponds to our own, you know, psychological experience. We feel the need to love, and we also feel the need to be loved. Now, I want to concentrate a little bit more on the need to be loved, and I said that it's a necessity of the ego. Avi, we're continuing if you want to join us. I wanted to say like this, that we have to distinguish legitimate self-esteem from the disease of egotism. I said we always speak about the evil of egotism, right? But egotism means where a person has a false estimate of the significance of his ego in the scheme of things. But I said at the same time, you have to recognize that of all the agencies in man, the one that's probably the most important in terms of carrying out his function is the ego. Because the ego is charged with understanding, with logic, with making decisions, with free will, right? Now, in order for the ego to function, it has to be charged with a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of libidinal energy, which we translate into esteem, love. A depleted ego, a person that's totally devoid of self-esteem or self-confidence, can't function. You see that Avram Avinu, all the great people, had to have the ego must be in a good state. A depleted ego is the source of evil. As a matter of fact, you see this, we're going to get to it in a few minutes, but you see that this was precisely what caused Adam to sin, as I will show you. So therefore, I mean to say like this, that man requires, in order for man to function, he requires a certain charge of energy towards his ego. See, otherwise the ego can't function in its best state. And I said that comes from two sources. It comes from the self, what we call self-esteem, but apparently it's not enough. He needs it from an external object, see, with whom he can identify. And that's what a person is looking for. He needs that charge. It must come from an external object, another human being. And that's why I wanted to say that lo tova yos adam levado. It's not good for him to be alone, not just that he's lacking a sexual outlet, but also that it's not the best state for his ego to be in. Because the ego to function at its best requires an object who's capable of understanding him and capable of reinforcing the ego. And that's why I said Azer Kenegdo. Because Azer means a help. That's what it's a helper. A sexual object is not a helper. It's just an outlet. But she's a helper because she helps him. She sustains him in a psychological sense. And then I explained Kenegdo, the Rashi of Kenegdo. Because I said that there's a danger in this too. That once you have another person who's there who supports your ego, there's a danger. Now you're going to get totally wrapped up in your own ego. And you won't be able to, you'll be in that self-pampering thing that everything that you desire has to be. You see? It's natural for a person to run. Who does he run when he gets into an argument? He runs to his friends or to his wife because he knows that she's going to back him up. That would be bad. So that's why there's Kenegdo. And Rashi says, Zacha. Kenegdo means that she's an opponent. It means like this, that she too has an ego. And she to that extent there's conflict. Because two egos get together, there's got to be a certain amount of conflict. Because no two egos are going to always be in perfect harmony. It's impossible. So that's why, if it's Zacha, if he can restrain his ego, and if he can control his ego, so that he can deal justly with her, so then she'll be a helper. Because she'll be satisfied, and she'll want to help him. But lo Zacha, if a person enters a relationship, and it's purely a selfish thing, he's only concerned with his own ego, that is to say, he can't get outside and recognize the legitimacy of an ego outside of his own, right? So then it'll be connected only lachen, because she'll sense that he's being unjust. And no person has an ego. No person is going to become a slave to somebody else, and they're going to be at war. You see, that's how I explain levado, and I explain the concept of ezer kenegdo. I think that's where I left off. All right, now I want to go further on the basis of this yisod. My next question that I wanted to take up was, what is the relevance of the pasuk al ken yazav ish? I mean, and my question was, it says right over there, therefore shall a man abandon his father and his mother and cling to his wife and they become one flesh. Nice, very nice idea, but what is it, how did it fit into the story? Now I want to say it like this, that if you take a look at the chait, you see that they both committed a chait. Adam and Chava both sinned. They both ate from the forbidden fruit. But was the sin identical in terms of its causality? In other words, in terms of the underlying determinants, the underlying causality of the chait, they both sin in the same manner? Or would you say there was a difference? And if so, what was the difference? Anybody?
Savahu leinayim.
You see, the Rashi is not the plain shot. The plain shot is she was overcome by the taiva. Savahu, it's taiva. So therefore,
Is the taiva for the thing itself, or is the taiva because that was the one thing that they...
What contributed to the taiva, of course, did it something else. But it means to say that her, I don't know if you could generalize about men and women in this regard, but let's put it this way, categorically, her ego was overcome by desire. In other words, the ego of the woman was not strong enough. I don't know, of course it was strong, she could have, she had free will. But the, in point of fact, the sin consisted in the fact that her ego was overcome by the lust, by the instinctual.
See?
That was her, that's right. Now, the sin of Adam was different. His ego, what? Yeah. His ego apparently was strong enough to withstand the desire itself. But he sinned. Why? I'm going to explain it a little bit deeper later on. But basically because she gave it to him. In other words, she sort of demanded that he do it. In other words, it was because of a fear of not being in line with her will. It was a fear of not being in line with her will. You see? In other words, it was a fear of losing her love was the cause. And the truth of the matter is that from this you see the all sin will fall into these two possibilities. A person only sins, whatever the sin will be for only one of two possible reasons. A, it's because of want, because of desire, instinctual desire per se, or B, and I'd say by far the majority is ego depletion. In other words, it's because, in the simplest sense, he himself doesn't need the thing itself, but indirectly, you see, he's a fear of losing somebody else's approval. You see, has to be in line. Well, most people that do things in a group, when they're in the group, they do it, they don't want to do it. But the group said, hey, eggs them on. It's an ego depletion, you see. By the way, from which we see that ego depletion is a very, very a dangerous state for a person to be in. A person can't function normally. All right? Now, the thing is like this, that the ego, the way God created man, the ego of Adam is sufficiently powerful to withstand taiva. But in order for it to function, it has to be in a certain state, that is to say, receiving a certain charge. It's a conditional kind of a thing. The ego can function properly when there's a certain condition, a certain conditional thing. Now, what's the idea of Alkein Yasov? I think the idea is like this. The Torah is depicting the whole life of man. In other words, when a person comes into, the way a person develops is that he goes, necessarily, each person goes from a state of dependence. He starts out in a state of dependence. He's dependent upon his father and his mother. That's the way a person comes into being. But it's God's desire that the person transforms, goes from a state of dependence to a state of independence. That's the only way a person can reach perfection. And by the way, this is a very big struggle that people struggle with their whole lives, and true independence in a psychological sense, is to go into a state of independence. Therefore, he has to break away from his father and his mother. One second. Alkein Yasov. The dependence, of course, you realize is not physical dependence. It starts out as physical dependence. It's not just physical, it's psychological dependence. You see? Psychological dependence means that the ego does not have sufficient strength to function on its own. It needs the support, the psychological support. That's what the Pasuk is talking about. It doesn't mean physically. Physically, the kid's already 13. He could be stronger than his father. But it means psychologically to carry on his life as an independent entity. So it's God's desire that he break away. Alkein Yasov. Therefore, in order to do so, he can only do so if there was another object who was a substitute for the original parental. You see? Because the parental is providing something. You see, in order to get that from the parental, it entails dependence. And God wants you to break away from the dependent. But at the same time, if you break away, so you need a source for something else that's being provided. And that is the ego charge, the love and support of the parents. So therefore, the davak v'ishto. The substitute is the ishto. In other words, the wife in that role is a substitute for providing the psychological support for the ego that the parents were providing. Let me just finish the point there. I want to get it says al kinyazva as aviv v'as ima, which means to say that in terms of this factor, the psychological, there's two different kinds of love. In other words, I would say, how do you distinguish between the love of the father and the love of the mother? If you can see a distinction. It's two things. The Torah doesn't just say parents. It says, Aviv v'yas imo, v'dar v'yishto.
Isn't the love of the father, he's living forever.
No. I'm not telling you what's motivating the love of the father. I'm telling you from the point of view of the ego that's receiving it. It identifies different loves. The ego identifies different loves. All right, you may not even know what I'm getting at. And it's not really essential. I'm just going to, I thought of the idea, and let's see what you think of it. It says, Ava vs. Imo, I think in terms of the prototype, the mother, there's a difference between the love of the mother and the love of the father, if you ask me. And what comes to mind is that the love of the mother is unconditional love. It's the nature of a mother to love their child unconditionally. In other words, not dependent upon what the child does or accomplishes or achieves. And it's pretty much of a standard kind of a thing. You know what I mean? There's an inherent bond, inherent love. The father represents approval for what you've accomplished. You see what I'm saying? In other words, every person in his own psyche needs someone who he feels loves him inherently for what he is. Doesn't matter what he does. And at the same time, he also has in his psyche, you see, when a person tries to accomplish something, you see, it's always psychologically or unconsciously trying to please someone from his youth. That's the prototype of that as the father. You see, a son, for example, wants to show his father, wants that he can do it. I don't mean that, of course, these things are overlap. They overlap. But the Torah gives you the prototypes. And I think that's the idea over here. That in terms of the psychological support that the ego requires, see, of course, when a person reaches a higher and higher level of perfection, these things become less important. I'm not denying that. I'm not saying that the Torah is acknowledging that this is why you should do things. But till we reach a state of perfection, you see, the ego requires these supports. And the davak v'ishto means that she now provides these things. That unconditional, each person needs unconditional, because there are times when a person is defeated and he feels he hasn't accomplished anything, whatever it may be. And a person also needs someone for whom he's striving to accomplish something for. Approval. Love and approval. You see? And that's why it's v'davak v'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad. V'davak v'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad means that it's a relationship. That the man, in order to function at his best, was designed to live in a state of a relationship. So that psychologically they become a new entity. There's a new entity now. That's the davak v'yishto v'hayu l'basar echad. That in the ideal situation, in order for him to function at his best, and I don't think this is a sexual phenomenon, you see, it includes the sexual, but it's a psychological phenomenon. In fact, you see, by the way, in the brachas of Sheva brachas, there are two brachas, Mesameach. The first one is Mesameach Hasan Vichala,
right?
And then the second one is Imakala. Am I right? I remember the other. There's definitely those two. It says Mesameach Hasan Vichala. So the question is, why do you have two brachos of the same idea? Mesameach. The bracha is that God rejoices the bride and groom. The first one is Mesameach Hasan Vichala as individuals. Of course, they remain. They remain two individuals. And the second bracha, in other words, each one should prosper as an individual in the relationship. And then the Mesameach Hasan Imakala is referring to the relationship itself. That as a relationship it should prosper. So you see that the Davak V'ishto means that the ideal situation, the way that the person is to live in a state of a relationship. And that's how it fits in over here, by the way. Al Kenyazov. You see, because it's an explanation. It's a plan of the phenomenon. The whole idea of the woman. It fits in now with the idea of Lotovios and Levado and Ezer Kinegdo and Al Kenyazov, that this is part of God's plan. It's a necessity in terms of God's plan, because God's plan for man entails that he go through a state of dependence and become independent. In order to do so, there's got to be someone who provides the psychological support that the parents provide. Akasha? Alright, yep. That's right, exactly. What I mean to say is that he's functioning as an independent being. I mean, of course, you could break it down. It can become a type of dependence, but it's different. In other words, yes, the plan is that the individual should become independent, but it's a relative independence. What I mean to say is it's not absolute independence. It's a relative independence. In other words, to be in a state of independence requires certain conditions, from the which is, you could call it dependence. But it's a different dependence, because I mean to say like this. There's a difference. What's the difference then? As a child, he's not independent at all. He's dependent. He's like a follower. You see what I'm saying? In other words, I'll give you a rough analogy. It's like saying, like, you're the captain, right? So I'm the follower. I'm the secretary, whatever you want to call. I'm your assistant. So the assistant means you're the commander. I'm dependent. I don't initiate anything. I'm dependent. I carry out orders. You see? Now you're telling me the time has come for me to become the commander, right? But I need an advisor. See? I need an advisor. In order for me to function as a commander, I need advisors. And I discuss with them and this. That's a yoatz. I discuss. Now that's a need. You see what I'm saying? The king cannot be a king unless he has advisors. He's not a king anyway. He's dependent. That's the difference. You see what I'm saying? No?
No, I understand what you're saying. I just want to answer. So when you say, I'll king, right.
What most people do is, what most people are looking for in life is the exact opposite of what they should be looking for. They're looking to reproduce the parental situation. There's a certain mentality like that. In other words, a dependent mentality. And that's why you'll see this affects people in many aspects in corporations. The corporation becomes a parent, and many people are very content to just take their place in a corporation, where that's why people are attracted to socialism, by the way. Socialism, these different mentalities. Capitalism, a lot of people are against capitalism because capitalism is independent and it's not protected. Yeah, you have to go out there and earn it. Whereas socialism is, you're protected. It's like the big family. The state becomes the parent. See, people are looking for a substitute for the parental in many, many forms and shapes. And of course, the wife very easily becomes that. So then you become dependent upon your wife. That's not the correct. That is not. The Torah is giving you the ideal prototype. The ideal prototype is an independent person, but the Torah recognizes that the independence of man cannot be such an independence that he's levado. That he's levado. That type of independence he can't have. I mean, that's not.
What I'm saying is, I agree with what you're saying, but
you can't become dependent on your wife. That wouldn't make any sense, because then why Yazav? You have to, when you read the pasuk, you see from the pasuk that it's the will of God that you should leave your father and mother, right? And why is that the will of God? Obviously, to become independent. In other words, the will of God doesn't make sense to learn the pasuk. It's the will of God to become independent of your parents in order to become dependent on your wife. What sense would that make? So therefore, we'll interpret the pasuk to mean that it's the will of God that you should become an independent creature. And that fits into the story of creation. Here we're talking about the creation of man, so it's God's will vis-a-vis man's creation. How shall he exist? He shall exist as an independent being. Oh, but he can't because he's dependent on his parents. The answer is he has to go through a transformation. Oh, but then there's something, he's being cut off from a vital necessity. The answer is the wife. Now, the wife is an intermediary, if you want to put it that way. And I'm using very rough terms here, you see. But the wife is true. You're right. If he did, that does imply a certain attachment and a certain dependence. It's not absolute independence. But apparently that's the greatest degree of independence that man is capable of achieving. That's why it's lo tov, hayosav levado. Otherwise, levado. Levado, you're right, levado would be better if man could achieve it, but apparently he can't. Overlook, I don't know what other problems might emerge. If a person was levado and totally preoccupied with his own narcissism, perhaps, you see, I may in the future shiurim break off from here. I see a lot of openings already. In other words, it could be a benefit that the ego gets this thing from an external source, because if he was levado, then it would be total narcissism. You see, the Ezer Kenegdo was a good thing for him, because it forced him to acknowledge another ego outside of himself. He's getting away. You follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In other words, where she is providing that need of his ego, it's a good thing in the sense that he's getting away. You see, like we say for a child, the love a parent has for a child. You see, classically speaking, we know it's a selfish thing, right? It's a selfish thing. Because the reason why a parent loves his child and does everything and sacrifices is because it's himself, it's identification. Because why wouldn't he do this for a different child? But still, it is chesed. It is compassion. Because to the extent that it's rooted in the self-love, but the self-love, remember we said this morning, has detached itself from its primary object and is focusing on a secondary object, already that's a break and it's a good thing. It's chesed. I'm sorry?
That's why Diane.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good thing. So I'm not even getting into that, whether it would be better the other way. I'm not really getting into that. But I'm just explaining to you, you helped me clarify the point. It's not absolute independence, it's relative independence, but it is a difference, in other words. I think that example is not a bad example. Between, in other words, a commander is independent. He's the commander, but he has advisors. You see? So the advisors don't mean to say that he's not independent. It's just a lessening. It's a relative thing. It's a relative. He's dependent on his advisors, but he's still the commander. Yes. In other words, someone who has a that's why the Davak Vishto, there's a commitment there. The Davak Vishto means that fits in with the idea of the relationship. There's a commitment. And this commitment is, of course, incorporated in the halachic. There's a halachic commitment over there. That's why marriage can't be broken without it. There's a commitment.
No. I mean,
what about the commitment for, means...
No. I mean that you should leave your father and mother. And you said that the father represents one type of...
Approval.
And the mother... Another type of
unconditional
love.
Means
how can a wife substitute for unconditional love?
No, unconditional doesn't mean to say no matter what you do. I didn't mean unconditional in the sense if you become a murderer, just to love you. It means basically they love you for what you are. They love you as you are. You don't have to prove yourself to them. You don't have to do something for them. They love you. They recognize something in you. That's what each person is looking for. That
isn't that a contradiction
between the two? No. At the same time, you have potential, and they want to see you grow in life too. They recognize you have potential. It's two different feelings, in other words. You get the feeling that this person just likes me. I can be myself. They just like me. They recognize me. I'm a good person. They like me. At the same time, since they like you, they identify with your goals in life, and they want to see you achieve. So if, when you achieve, they give you they give you good feeling. It's like a compensation, because you need an incentive to achieve. I don't think I'm talking in very plain, ordinary... in other words... In ordinary terms, I'm not looking for fancy stuff here. In other words, I could be wrong on this too. My shear really doesn't stand and fall on these points. I just thought I'd throw them in because of the emo. And I'm just isolating. I mean to say like this, that it seems to me that each person, for example, you derive a certain consolation from the mother. And the type of consolation from the mother is that you just feel that she loves you, period. It's not dependent. It's not dependent. It's not. It's not. Of course, it's better if you do more things. And of course, if there are certain things you do, she's not going to love it. I mean, I don't mean to say it's absolutely unconditional. But in general, it's for you.
It's an inherent love.
It's an inherent, exactly, inherent love. And the love of the father is something you're striving for. It's not inherent. The love of the father is something I have to strive for. To get the love of the father, because it's more approval, exactly. It's more approval of what you've done. That's what I wanted to say. And I think that a wife can incorporate both.
I think that's how it's
what's so hard?
How can it be?
Is that a problem that one person can't incorporate both functions? A parent is doing that. I mean, both parents, by the way, both parents partake of this. That you give the child a sense that they are... all right, we should go on. Okay. Come back to that. All right. All right. Let me, I think Avi is right. It's a separate discussion. It doesn't... why should we get stuck on it? He's right. I have one more point to make. And then I'll take questions. Okay. I think, if I remember correctly, there's only one further question, and that was the two namings. The two namings, right? Okay. The thing is like this. That I mentioned before that Ezer Kenegdo is a very, has different layers of significance and meaning. Rashi, in other words, if Zocha, if he's not Zocha, so it's Kenegdo, and so forth. And that explained, functionally, that in order for man to derive the optimal benefit of the relationship, he has to relate to it properly. But I think there's another concept over here, as well. And the two go side by side. And that is to say that when I said Kenegdo, it means that she has her own ego. So therefore what we're saying is that there's a certain friction that's already inherently built into the situation. Because you're dealing with two egos. And two egos, I don't care how much identification there is, are still two egos. In fact, Freud had mentioned that every relationship has ambivalence. There's love and there's hate. So it seems to me there's a certain amount of frustration which is inherently built into the situation. And that's really a good. It's part of the design. Because, you see, like in our society recognizes, apparently, that the ultimate good in life is love. is the relationship. Everybody's looking for the relationship. That's the most important thing. And that's why there's tremendous frustration, because people are searching for it and everything, and all kinds of problems. Well, then they don't work out, and then they get divorced, and they keep searching. But basically, in their mind, they have this fantasy of the ultimate relationship. And the truth of the matter is, it's just a fantasy. It's an impossibility. Because it can't be. No relationship can be that perfect, because you're dealing with two separate egos, so there's always going to be friction. And that's a good thing. Because if man could find perfection in this area, if man could find the ultimate satisfaction of his fantasy, it would be terrible. It would be the destruction of man. Because then he'd never have any motivation to strive further for the true good, the spiritual good. The relationship is a necessary, and it's a good only as a precondition. You see? Only as a means to an end. But to take a look, when a person falls in love, unfortunately, these feelings don't last that long. They wear off. But in the early stages of a love affair, this person is not a productive person. He's not learning. He's not... What if he's doing his job? Why? Because he's totally... He has no energy. All of his energy is taken up. He's totally happy. In order for a person to go out and to try and conquer whatever it is, intellectually or scientifically, whatever it may be, he's got to have a stimulus. But I'm telling you that a person who's totally in love with somebody else, it's lacking. It's lacking already. Because he's all of his energy will be involved in that thing. That's a very powerful, powerful area. You see how all society's caught up. That's what the society's really looking for. The only reason why the job society gets done is because people haven't found them. They're frustrated. So their energy goes into something else. But we know from the Torah that it's an impossibility. Because it's either kinegdo. There's always going to be the element of kinegdo.
You always have people falling in love.
What? Falling in love. Right. Yeah, but the point of it is, it's a little bit of a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap.
Short-lived.
Gets you into the thing, and you make a commitment, and you get married, and after marriage, but it's too late because you already got married. It doesn't last. If you have, I know you like everybody else has this fantasy that it's going to last forever. But speak to everybody else, and you'll find out that it's impossible by nature.
So
it can't last.
So what happens, though?
So what happens is you try to pick up the pieces. Now what happens is like this, obviously, is that the relationship has to be based upon other factors as well. And that's the emotional state. I don't mean that there's no emotion. You still have emotion for the person. But it's not the original intensity. What? Let's take a look at what happened. What was the chait of Adam? The chait of Adam was that he gave in to the desire of Chava, right? Now, what does that show you? What does that show you? That he had invested too much energy. As soon as the woman was created, he was involved in a whole new area now. The area of investment of energy into an object. That's a very tricky and a very dangerous game. In other words, what I'm saying is like this. The most precious thing you have is your psychic energy. That's the most precious thing you have. But people don't look at it that way. And the way a person should look at his activities and his the investment of a psychic energy is the way a businessman looks at his money. In other words, in the realm of business, all loss is a result of a faulty investment of money, of financial resources. In the psychological sphere, all experience of pain is a result of a faulty investment of psychological energy. In other words, you have to invest psychological energy, you see? But because if you don't invest it, then you can't get any pleasure, any return. You don't get any pleasure. On the other hand, if you invest it improperly, once you invest, you're setting yourself up for pain. You see, the person meets a girl, and before he knows her character and this and that, he's excited, he falls in love, he's setting up, so he doesn't know. First of all, she may reject you. Secondly, even if not, she may be bad for you. And then she can, you see, in other words, a person has to be very, very careful with the investment of a psychological energy, that she only invests it in the proper things, in the proper activities, in the proper people, and so on and so forth. Most relationships people get into, they've experienced this person disappointed me and everything. I feel so, well, why did you get so attached in the first place? You didn't even know the person well enough. You projected, you assumed, and so forth. To make a long story short, but that's basically what people are doing. Now, what happened over here was like this, that of course, that God brought the woman to the man. You see? God brought the woman to the man. Right? Now, what did he say? Zos hapam, etzem eyatzami, ubasam epsari. It's not just, it seems to me, that you got to posit that this statement is not just a calm, descriptive statement. He's saying why he likes her. But it was exaltation. Zos hapam. You have to read it with some feeling. It was feeling. Euphoria. Euphoria. When he first met her, you see, he was drawn, he was attracted, and he invested more energy. In other words, It wasn't God's desire that all of his energy should be tied up with the woman. A certain amount of energy should be tied up with the woman. But it's got to be such that the balance of his, there must be a proper balance of psychic forces in order that he can still retain the proper relationship to God. Every relationship to a person or to a physical object carries the danger that it upsets the balance of psychic forces, which is necessary for the ultimate relationship. The ultimate object of one's energy should be God, the pursuit of God. You see? That's the, in other words, the chait was that he invested too much energy. You see, too much, and therefore, had he invested less energy, he didn't have to sin. He didn't have to sin. He sinned because he was too committed to the woman. He was afraid of losing her. That meant he had invested too much energy. Had he invested less energy and it was in a different level, then he could have said no. The whole outcome could have been different. He could have said no. Don't like me. I don't care. And he could have convinced her that she should do tshuva and bring her back. You see? In other words, it's a very difficult and very delicate thing. But the outcome, the fate of a person, by the way, why have many people? Most people in life are always, succumbing to pressure. Why do people get involved in shady deals and this and that? How many cases you'll see? It wasn't the guy, the wife is upset, she's upset because the other one has a better car and this one and that one. This guy feels the pressure. And finally, he's desperate, he has to make more money, so he gets involved in a shady deal and he gets caught. He didn't care about how much money, but the point is he couldn't take the fact that his wife didn't love him, or he thought she didn't love him, whatever it is. Now, if he had less, if he was more detached, all that is a function of how much energy is being attached. Now, I want to say that was the nature of his chait. And you see a certain reflection of that in the euphoria of Zos HaPam. At that point, he can only name her Isha. The naming of Isha is not the same naming that he was involved in with the other animals. With the other animals, it was objective. He was looking at them from a purely objective. He was detached. He was defining their character as they are in and of themselves. When he saw the woman, Lazoshi Kari Isha, he only saw her insofar as she was a reflection, how she related to him. That's all. He didn't look at her as an object in her own right. Lazoshi Kari Isha, Kime Ishlu Kachazos. That's it. He had found this fantastic thing. There was euphoria. At that point, he couldn't even think about Chava. There was no Chava. It was purely Isha. But then, as a result of the chait, he was very sobered up. Because as soon as he sinned, and God confronted him, what did he say? Ha'isha asher nasata imadi, he nasta limina etzva. It was a totally different. This is a far cry from Zos HaPam, etzame atzomi, but this is the most fantastic thing. Here, it's the woman that you gave here with me. She did it. Already he's detaching himself. You see, because he already was sobering up. He recognized the consequences. That this thing was not such a, was fantastic, could lead to tremendous dangers as well. He was beginning to detach himself from the original relationship. And Chazal say he was kafi tov. They blame him. They say kafi tov means an ingrate, someone who doesn't recognize a good, a tov. God had done him a tov because it was lo tov ayos levado. And now, instead of thanking God, he's blaming God. So already from Zos HaPam, he's already blaming God for what happened. It's not a tov anymore. Now, what does it mean? But in reality, it is a tov. Yeah, in reality, it's a tov. It's only a tov if you relate to it in the proper way. God gave him something that was truly a tov, which could be utilized to raise him to a higher level. That's why that was the tov. But God left it to his own free will, since he approached it in the wrong way, and he became too emotionally involved. So for him, it wasn't a tov. But of course, instead of looking at himself and seeing his own error, he blamed it on the woman and indirectly on God. That was his sin. He distorted the reality. He should have recognized. But I'm saying that between the naming of Isha and the naming of Chava, a certain change occurred as a result of the chait. He began to detach himself. And then afterwards, after the chait, his nature, you know, the rest of this, his nature was changed, and the new force, the conscience was created, the superego. And then, you see, then he got back to his original work again. He went back to work. Naming. The second name. Now, the second name was part of the same work of classification that he gave to all the animals. He looked at the woman now, and he looked at her as an objective entity, where she stands in the scheme of creation apart from his own ego, and he called her Chava. But this second naming required that he be able to separate himself from her, and to detach himself, and to look at her as a separate, not how she fits into his ego scheme, but how she is in and of herself. What role does she have? Then he named her Chava. But that could not be done right away. because his initial reaction was a reaction of euphoria. Zosapam, Etzaman, something. He was caught up in how it satisfied his own emotions. So he named her Isha. Isha was an expression of that euphoria. But that didn't define her as an independent being. That can only come about later on, when he went through the process of detachment. You see? And he went through the sin, and already it was Isha Shanasati Madi. It wasn't such a tremendous thing. He began to detach himself, and then later on he got back into studying, and then he looked at her in a purely objective way, and the second naming was the true naming. The naming of Chava was under the framework of the same naming as the name of all the other animals. Alright, so that's basically what I wanted to say. That answers all the questions. Yeah, okay. The name Adam was the name that God gave to the man because it represented the fact that this person was created from the earth. But he knew the word Ish, and therefore he gave her Isha, which means from the man. That was the most appropriate term, from the man.
Right.
Well, but not from the Adam.
Now what is Chaya?
From the man, because it's more specific. Adam just means earth. And that's what God used to call him, right? But the word Ish meant male. And Isha was more specific, right? So he named her from the male. That's Isha.
What does Chava mean?
Chava represents the mother of all life.